The end of Parshas Matos has a series of psukim that seem like they're just really a list. The story of the psukim at the end of Matos is the deal that was struck between Moshe Rabbeinu and the 2.5 Shvatim. The details of exactly which land they get in Evar Yarden and which will be taken by which of the 2.5 Shvatim seems to be entirely beside the point. The point is they wanted a place for their children and for their flock, or rather for their flock and for their children, as Rehearsal spoke about last night. But who gets exactly which land? I don't know how many of us are pointing at a map and trying to figure out exactly who gets exactly which land. Yet, if you take a closer look, the Torah seems to be telling us much more than just the lay of the land and the survey of the area and who ends up where. The very last two psukim of Parshas Matos describe the lands that are settled, that are conquered and settled by Chatzi Shevet Menashe. And what does it say? V'yair ben Menashe halach ve'al kodes as Chavos Sehem, Vayikra Esen Chavos Ya'ir. Ya'ir conquered a certain area, and they called that place Chavos Ya'ir, which makes a lot of sense, because they are Ya'ir. So they called it Chavos Ya'ir. V'novach halach, v'yilkodes k'nas v'espinoseha, v'yikra la novach b'shmo. Novach conquered land, and instead of calling it Chavos Novach, they called it Novach Bishmo. They called it Novach after their own name. This is a series of psukim that you could read 1,000 times in your life and never pay any attention to it. Never think that there's any significant message. But we know the richness of Torah, and there's a significant message in every single word. Bein lahalacha, bein bahashkafa. In fact, on these psukim, there's a famous story with Rav Lazer Silver, where someone, I think it was one of the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, I think who's the current Telzer Rosh Yeshiva in Riverdale? Anyone know? Rav Osband? Who's Rav Osband? Rav Osband is what, Rav Yitzchak Isaac Osband? No? Anyone know? Bookminders? You don't know? Okay, so I think one of the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva wanted to, did you guys ever live in Riverdale? That was like before your time? Before your time, okay. So the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, I forgot which one, wanted to name his child after his Rebbe. And his Rebbe's name was, I think, Avram Yitzchak, but the problem was his father, who was alive, his name was like Chaim Yitzchak or something. No, his Rebbe's name was Yitzchak Isaac, and his father was alive was like Avram Yitzchak or something. And he wanted to know, can you name after his Rebbe, even though one of those names is already his father's name? And Rav Lazer Silver said, of course you can. It's a totally different name when you have a second name. It's a Beferish Pasuk at the end of Parshas Matos. What? It's a Beferish Pasuk at the end of Parshas Matos? Yeah, because the Pasuk says that when Ya'ir conquers a city, they call it Chavos Ya'ir. And then that's it. They call it Chavos Ya'ir. Novach conquers a city, they call it Novach Bishmo. Only if you give the exact name and don't add anything to it is it Bishmo. Is it considered to be the exact name? But once you change it a little bit, once you add even another name to it, then it becomes an entirely different name. So even like just La Halacha, that Rav Lazer Silver would pass in a Shaila based on a series of psukim that we probably would never have paid any heed to it. I'm not saying that we should rely on that Halacha L'maisa. When I told this to Mariv Rabbi Rav Willig, he said, my kids wouldn't even have the chutzpah to ask such a question, let alone to name a child like that. During my lifetime, but be that as it may, there is a lot over here in these psukim. So first of all, there are very few places in Tanakh where the word la appears without a mapikei. Mapikei, for those who are not grammatically inclined, is the little dot inside the hey that therefore says that you're supposed to pronounce the hey sound la, as opposed to just la. And Rashi notes the problem. You know, the yeshivish pronunciation is always without the mapike. You always pretend it's not there, but that's not really correct. Over here, the yeshivish pronunciation is correct. No mapike. La without the mapike. So Rashi says, why? Why is this an exception? So Rashi quotes from Rav Moshe HaDarshan that the word la without the mapike sounds a lot like lo lamed aleph. lo mitten aleph, as they say in Yiddish, that it sounds a lot like the word no, and it's a remez to the fact that the name that was given by Novach didn't last very long at all. In contrast to Chavos Yair, the name that was given by Yair, that lasted a long time, and that's why it doesn't say lo by Chavos Yair; it says lo, so to speak, by Novach. And in fact, that's evident from the reference to Chavos Yair in Sefer Shoftim, in Perek Yud of Sefer Shoftim. It still says Ad Hayom Hazeh, that it was still Chavos Yair Ad Hayom Hazeh. So apparently, that name lasted for a very long time. So that definitely answers the question about the Mapakei, at least al derech hadrush. But Viter, you can ask, so why is that so important? Why do I need to know that, oh, this name lasted a long time and that name didn't last a long time? What difference does it make which name lasted and which name didn't last? And furthermore, as we pointed out before, maybe we'll take a different approach, why is it that there's such a difference between Novach and Chavos Yair? Not only in the sense of permanence, but in the way that the names were chosen. Novach calls it just Novach. Yair doesn't call it Yair, he calls it Chavos Yair. So, and also the Torah says Novach is b'shmo, Chavos Yair is never b'shmo. Why the difference between the two? So it seems, now one can answer this question, it's based on a very basic yesod. One day you are likely going to have to apply for a job. And when you do that, you're likely going to have to write a resume. You have to make sure the resume is perfect, make sure there are no typos, because when they get 1,000 resumes for a job, they immediately throw out the ones that have even the slightest typo, because why bother with something like that? So one day you're going to have to write a resume. I happen to have the good fortune, the great mazel and the siyata d'shmaya, that in my entire life I never had to apply for a job. I just knew people who, I met Rabbi Kamenetsky at a chasana, and he said, hey, why don't you work in my yeshiva? Okay, great idea. So I went and worked in his yeshiva. So when you do have to, in fact, in Turo now, they said, you never gave a resume. I'm like, because I never applied. And now I have to write a resume a year after I got the job. Whatever, maybe I can complain to the Rosh Hashiva when he comes about that. But when you write a resume, there are different sections of a resume. There's a section that's that describes your job skills and your job experience, and at the bottom there's a little tiny section of hobbies. Little things that you enjoy to do. Now, you better make sure you're not lying on any part of it, and even the hobbies part, because like you try to throw in that you like swimming or something, and you never know, the guy interviewing you will be like a former Olympic swimmer, and he's like, oh, do you do the 100 breaststroke and whatever, and you'll just be, you won't know what you're talking about. But those are clearly different sections that are on a resume. And what's the difference between the two? Which one is more important? So it's important that a person have hobbies, but they're not really so interested in what in particular those hobbies are. Whether you like cycling or you like karate or something like that in your spare time, they see that you're involved in physical activity, that you're broad beyond just your ability as a financial analyst, let's say, and that speaks well of you. But what your particular hobby is doesn't really matter that much, unless it's like axe murdering. Then it would matter a lot. But other than that, it doesn't really matter so much. The work experience section and the skills section that are needed for the job, that helps to define the kind of professional that the person is going to be. That's what they're looking for. That's the most critical. So if an analyst were to apply to a job with a resume that describes him as a guitarist who also reads the Wall Street Journal once in a while, he's not going to get the job as a financial analyst if he defines himself as someone who plays the guitar and not as someone who's interested in the markets. So similarly, when it comes to a religious identity, when people identify themselves by their material possessions, when we relate to our mitzvos, you can relate to our mitzvos in two ways. We could relate to our mitzvos as something that we do. I happen to be an Orthodox Jew. I happen to be Shomer Torah mitzvos. Or they can be who we are. They can be what we are about. I remember the first time that the Cardinals, not the St. Louis kind, came to Yeshiva University. So one of them pulled aside one of the boys from the Beis Medrash, and Rav Shechter likes to tell the story, and started asking him, what are you studying in college? And he said, well, I'm a pre-med student. So he said, so what are you doing here in the religious study hall? He said, no, pre-med student is what I study. This here, this is what I am. I don't know if they could have picked a better boy to talk to. Like that is like that. That's the message. This is what I am. This is how I define myself. Think back in Sefer Bereishis. Yosef HaTzadik has two dreams, and many have noted that one was about wheat, which represents material wealth, and the other was about the stars, representing spiritual heights. And the Beis Halevi points out that in the dream about wheat, where are the brothers in the dream about wheat? It's not that the wheat represents the brothers, but that the brothers are themselves and they are near the bushels of wheat. They're with or next to the bushels of wheat. In the dream about the stars, though, the brothers aren't there. They are the stars. The stars represent who they are. When it comes to material wealth, the tzaddik may or may not possess material wealth, but he most certainly doesn't define himself by his material wealth. There have been tzaddikim who have been very poor and tzaddikim who have been very rich and everything in between. But that is not what makes him who he is. When it comes to spiritual wealth, the heights that a tzaddik reaches is what defines him. That's why the Beis Halevi explains, the brothers are only jealous with the dream about the stars. Yeah, the wheat gives them nothing to be jealous about. Okay, your hobby is guitar and mine is something else. I have no reason to be jealous of you. So you're a better guitarist in your hobby than I am in my hobby. I have nothing to be jealous about. But in who we are when dreaming of achieving greater spiritual accomplishments, that's what causes the brothers to become jealous. That's how the Beis Halevi explains. About a year and a half ago, my friend Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg from Boca Raton, Florida, spoke at a Karen Biavna dinner. And he told the story of a man who wrote a letter to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And the letter read something like this. I could be getting some of the words wrong, but it read something like this. Dear Rebbe, I assume it said something nicer than Dear Rebbe. Lekvod, Moreno, whatever, Admor. I'm having so much trouble in life. I lost my job. I've had no hatzlacha in learning. I've struggled with shalom bayis. I haven't been successful in cultivating a meaningful relationship with my children. I just don't know what to do, and I was hoping you'd give me a bracha and advice on how I can improve the situation. The Rebbe, in a stroke of genius, didn't write a letter back. What did he do? He returned the man's note and just circled the word I every time. Let's read that letter again. Dear Rebbe, I am having so much trouble in life. I lost my job. I have had no atzach in learning. I have struggled with shalom bayis. I haven't been successful in cultivating a meaningful relationship with my children. I just don't know what to do, and I was hoping you would give me a bracha and advice on how I can improve the situation. Nine times, in a three-sentence letter, the Rebbe just circled the word I every time it appeared in the letter. And what the Rebbe was showing the person was that his problem was not a result of his life circumstances, but it was defining himself by his problems. That is, I am my problems. No, you are someone who's going to be successful, who is successful, who's a child of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who has Kedusha. Your challenges in life, that's what happens to you. But you have to be defined by much more than your challenges. Rav Schwab, Zichron Avrach, explains that that's the difference between Novach and Yair. Novach conquers and names the city Novach Bishmo. Who is Novach? Novach is Novach's conquests. If I captured land, that's who I am. Yair conquers and names the city Chavos Yair. Not exactly the name, just the villages of Yair. This is what we happen to have. It's in the hobby section of Yair's resume. And therefore, Rashi's explanation is so much more powerful when you think of this insight. If your attitude toward your material wealth is that it defines you, like in the case of Novach, then there will be no kiyum. It's not going to last, Rashi says. Lo, Novach! But if your attitude is that it's nothing more than a feather in your cap, as in Yair's case, a throwaway line on a resume, something that you've been blessed with but isn't who you are, then it will have a kiyum. Ad hayom hazeh. Then it's still going to exist for a very long time. And Rav Schwab goes on to explain that most mitzvos don't really lend themselves to a definition, to a self-definition, meaning even in the world of mitzvos. Like if you take a lulav, you don't become a lulav. You're a guy who took a lulav, but it's not. It doesn't redefine the person as a lulav. It's funny, he gives the example of tefillin. He says, you take tefillin, you don't become a cheftza shel tefillin. Although Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Razna taught us last week or 2 weeks ago, that Rav Soloveitchik had a whole Torah where he thought, not that way, he thought that by tefillin you become a karkafta de lamanach tefillin if you don't wear tefillin. That it actually defines the person, it becomes who you are when it comes to tefillin. So it's an odd example that he gives with tefillin. But generally speaking, you eat matzah, you don't become a matzah. You're a guy who happened to have eaten matzah. But there are three mitzvos that Rav Schwab identifies that actually help to define who you are, that can be life-changing, defining mitzvos in terms of who we define ourselves as being. First, he says there's Torah. The Gemara tells us that b'tchila nikreis al shemo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu ki im b'toras Hashem cheftza. Initially, the Torah is called by Hashem. It's b'toras Hashem cheftzo, va'achar kach naseis Torah shalo. And then the Torah becomes his. U'b'toraso yage yomam v'layla. His own Torah, it's your Torah. The Gemara Makos records, kama tivshoi shar inshi, dekaimi mekami sefer Torah v'lokaimi mekami gavra rabba. How foolish people are that they stand for a Sefer Torah but not for a Gavra Rabba. Why? Why is that foolish? Because a Gavra Rabba is a Sefer Torah. Rav Bina said it a few times last night. Every single Jew has Kedusha. This is the halacha of Soloveitchik explained. That's why there's a din that at Shas, if someone is there, at Shas Yitzias Neshama, you tear Kriya if you're there at Shas Yitzias Neshama. Why? Because the Gemara says it's like a Sefer Torah Shenisraf. Sefer Torah Shenisraf, where's the Torah? A Jew is the Torah. He becomes the Torah. Second, Rav Schwab says there's tefillah. We are described in Hebrew as being mispalel, not mifalel. David HaMelech says, va'ani tefillah. When I daven, it's not that I am davening, I'm doing something called tefillah. I am becoming a cheftza shel tefillah. Va'ani tefillah. It takes over our whole body and our whole being. When we define ourselves by our tefillah, we could never show up late. When we define ourselves by our tefillah, as Rabbeinu was discussing last night, we could never talk during davening. You're talking to the Ribbono Shel'olam. This is who I am. This is what I was put on this earth to do. To be an Oved Hashem, to serve the Ribbono Shel'olam. And now right in the middle of this most intense avdus of Hashem, okay, I'm going to space out because I'm human. That's human. But right in the middle of this intense avdus Hashem, I'm going to have the chutzpah to start doing other things. Start talking to somebody else. Not for someone who's va'anit fila. I was just listening as I was waiting for Rav Sachs because I messed up the time. So I was standing by the front gate of camp listening to a 4 minute shiur from Rav Schachter that they had just put on Yayit Torah. And the shiur was about tefillah b'tzibur. In 4 minutes, he said three, if not four times, you should not come on time to davening. You should come early to davening. In a 4 minute shiur. When someone is va'anit fila, the way he carries himself in davening and toward davening is an entirely different way. And finally, Rav Schwab says, there's Shabbos. It's not just Shabbos, it's something we observe. A person has the ability to become a Shabbos Jew. Hayom Yom Rishon LeShabbos, Hayom Yom Sheni LeShabbos. The whole week is looking forward to Kedushas HaShabbos. The experience of Shabbos is not something that we're just waiting, oh, when's it over, these long Shabbosos. No, but that we value every moment of it. We value every moment of that Kedusha. I have a cousin, Rav Natana Leibowitz, who's on, helps run the NCSY Kollel. So he stayed at my house a number of years ago for a Shabbos. I forget what the circumstances were, why he wasn't by my parents in Lawrence. He was by my house for whatever reason. And we noticed in the morning that, like, his bed wasn't used. And, like, you know, we went to sleep pretty late, woke up early in the morning. And his response, you know, I said, like, Tom, did you go to sleep last night? He's like, how could I waste moments of Kedushas HaShabbos and sleep? So, la halacha, that's not really, you know, true. That's not really, I mean, la halacha, really, you're supposed to rest on Shabbos. It's mitzvah onik Shabbos. But the feeling that Shabbos has so much Kedusha and you want to take advantage of every moment, you want to utilize every moment of Kedushas HaShabbos, that's something. That's something to strive for. So this is something that maybe as just sort of a, maybe we'll have an opportunity for a parting message on Sunday, so maybe we'll not use this as a parting message, but maybe just a message that we can take with us. from psukim that you never would have looked at a second time. Novach Bishmo, Chavos Yair. When you define yourself by Novach, by the villages that you conquer, you define yourself by the materialistic things, then it's not going to have a kiyum. Lo Novach. But when we define ourselves by things like Torah, Tefillah, Shabbos, oh, we happen to have Chavos Yair. We happen to own some villages. Then we'll have a kiyum in Ruchnius and in Gashmius.